Safety, dependability, and power. Chevy Silverado isn't happy unless the work is hard and the day is long. No wonder Silverado is America's number one best-selling retail pickup truck. Go to ChevyDriveChicago.com and put a Silverado in your toolbox.
Oh, there's nothing like a little Ray Conniff at 4 o'clock in the morning. It's Dave Player on 720 WGN. Steve Darnell discovered the golden age of radio at the age of 12 and is the host of Those Were the Days, a weekly show looking back at the simpler times, the happy days, the golden years of old-time radio and beyond. Steve's been the publisher and editor of Nostalgia Digest magazine since 2004. And joining me tonight to talk about the spring edition that just came out is Steve Darnell. What's going on, buddy?
Good morning, David. Good to see you.
Good morning and good to see you
as well. I just come from White House. I'm from meeting with total strangers and America great again.
Nice. I like that.
April Fool.
April Fool, everybody. There you go.
April Fool sketch.
All right. Speaking of April Fool, and I just thought about that. Steve does a radio show on another station, and Those Were the Days that's been on for 47 years.
Yeah, 47 years. Month.
And I turned on his show this afternoon, and I heard the drive. It was set like 70s music, and I shut it off because I'm like, well, what is this? I mean, it was fine, it wasn't what I was expecting.
It was our April
But it was Fool's. Your show.
Yes, we heard this from so many people. Every time we've done a show on April Fool's Day, and this is my first one, we've always started with a fake opening to our show. That's our prank.
Yeah.
And so we got Steve Downs from another station to do our show Swinging in the 70s. And it was hysterical because, of course, we'd have 50 or 60 calls from people who were panicked, a lot of them thinking, you know, I just gave to your station. What are you doing to me?
Or I just lost the signal.
And yeah, right. Some said, did I get the right station?
Yeah.
One person actually turned it off and then called us at the end of our show because he assumed that the 70s show was going to go on until 5 o'clock and that we might go on after that.
Interesting.
So he was wondering if he'd hear the beginning. And of course, it was also an excuse to play. We got to share some great records from Andy Griffith and Bob Newhart and Tom Lehrer. Actually, one of the few things of Red Foxes you can actually play on the radio.
Yeah, that's very few.
Yeah. So we had a ball. And it's always a great pleasure to get to share those old sounds.
Very cool. And I just thought about that. Yeah, April's Fool doesn't always fall on a Saturday, obviously.
This was the first one, I think, since 06.
Look at that.
It's great fun. And I hate to say a lot of work because that's sort of like saying playing Major League Baseball
show
is a lot of work. But yeah, you're there to have a good time.
Absolutely.
And we do.
Speaking of good time, always love, and I always mention this, if you're looking at WGNradio.com, I'm holding up Nostalgia Digest magazine. I love when I get this in the mail because it's just a great throwback and great stories. And it's an education for me because I always learn about new things looking at this and find them so interesting. And this is something that was started, and I was looking at when it first started. It was like on 8.5 by 11 sheets, I think.
When Chuck Chaden started it in 1974, it was literally a newsletter. It was one of those broadsheets that was folded over into thirds to make 8.5 by 11 pages and then folded into thirds to be mailed.
There was a lot there.
Well, yeah, it's funny for the fact it was 6 pages long.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was remarkable.
Yeah.
And over the years, we've always tried to be a mixture of I think, history and entertainment, you know.
Movies, television, music,
right.
Just pop culture in general.
Nostalgia is a very broad umbrella, as you know. And I always sort of – I think the fact that it's a Chicago area publication helps in that regard because – I've always taken the same approach to publishing this digest as we do to the weather, which is if you don't like it, wait 5 pages, it will change.
Yeah.
You know, and
totally
it's sort
true.
Of yeah. So the article about radio may not be up your alley, but you may enjoy it. And if not, then the article about television right afterwards might be more up your alley.
Exactly.
And as I think Paul McCartney said, you know, sometimes you don't mind being somebody's aspirin.
No, that's right. You know? Exactly. And, that's and right. I'm that's always, a good. I like that.
I'm delighted for the chance to hopefully inform or educate people about things that they didn't know about, or maybe remind them of memories that they had.
And here's the really cool thing: is it's $17 for a year, $30 for 2 years. It's a quarterly publication. I got to talk to you about this, folks, because it's one of my favorite magazines. And you can go to nostalgiadigest.com, and you can call or fax 773-769-6575, and you can call and get your subscription, or again go online at nostalgiadigest.com. And this month is looking at the cover is a couple things. The cover is William Powell and Myrna Loy.
Oh, do you love Myrna Loy and William Powell? Are the most perhaps the most glamorous couple Hollywood ever produced?
Yeah,
aren't
yeah,
they?
Yeah. And it's all about the Thin Man.
Well, yeah, actually, it's about the movies Beyond the Thin Man.
Yeah.
You know, we actually published in our last issue a great article we received about the Thin Man movies, and it really it coincided with somebody else sending us an article, and we said, you know, we love your article, but we just got a Thin Man. Could you possibly rewrite this to be about every movie they did other than the Thin Man?
Yeah, exactly.
And he pulled out a terrific article. Ed Shaw did, you know, my gosh, yeah, it's hard to imagine a more glamorous couple. This is one of those, you know, I always love finding photos to put on the cover of the Digest.
Yeah.
And what a pleasure to find a couple like Powell and Loy, because they never took a bad picture together.
You have to, it has to be the grabber, you know, that picture that's on the cover. But you talk about them, you know, there's not a lot of couples today that do movies together continually, like pairings. There's not comedy teams that really do it so much anymore, and there's not romantic couples that do the movies together anymore, like the Doris Day and the Rock Hudsons or the Myrna Loys.
Well, I think as the studio system died out, it meant that performers were no longer under contract to a specific place, and so, you know, as the life of a freelancer. Yeah, you bounce from studio to studio and from star to star. Yes, back in the days when William Powell and Myrna Loy and Clark Gable were all at MGM, there was a very good chance you'd see them in various films together.
But if there was a good chemistry and it was a success at the box office, you'd see them together again.
Yes,
and
of course.
That's why I kind of miss that a little bit. I like to see some, you know, James Bond, you know, and then some of these, you know, superhero serials and, you know, that you have version, you know, 2, 3, 4, 5. That's all you see now. And so... Mm-hmm. You don't have those couples doing other movies together. I kind of miss that.
That's true. And, of course, in those days when William Powell and Myrna Loy were doing the Thin Man movies or the other films they did together, there was not the same necessarily obsession with continuity.
Yeah.
I mean, you talk about the superhero movies, and some of them are very entertaining, but you also go realizing that you're buying one volume of an encyclopedia.
True.
You know, that if you're going to go see Doctor Strange, implicit is that you're going to go see the next Avengers movie or whatever it might be.
That's true.
And you're right. A Thin Man movie or the movies they did together, like Double Wedding or Manhattan Melodrama, they stand alone on their own. They're beautiful works of film.
Now, these two also did old-time radio together, too, because we have to remember that you would dramatize a movie. If the movie was big and popular, there would be usually a one-hour movie version, Lux Radio Theater, right?
Yeah. Right. We played a couple of their Thin Man appearances on our show a few weeks back, and in May, I think we're going to play the Lux production of Manhattan Melodrama. For those who'd like to, for those hearing us talk about my show, which I know is on another station, the Digest also includes the schedule for our show, so that if you hear us talking about William Powell and Myrna Loy on the Lux Radio Theater and you get the spring issue, you'll be able to see exactly what day of the month we're playing that.
And then you got a birthday tribute in here, too, to Doris Day, which you know, she's one of those that you'd love to get, but she doesn't do very many interviews.
No.
And she's going to be 95 or 93. We're not sure, because even on Wikipedia, it's one of the few pages that says, you know, is she 95 or is she 93? It depends on who you believe, right?
I know, and we're going to do something about Doris Day on the show, and you're right. It's one of those things where you just have to acknowledge nonagenarian, because the last thing you want to do, either of us or anybody in this field, is say, happy 95th. Oh, we're wrong.
Yeah. I never
Doris
ask a woman
Day
their age.
Corrected
no,
us.
Especially that generation,
But my God, what an amazing performer. And it's funny, my friend Mike Barrett, who wrote this article about Doris Day, he loves to quote the line by Oscar Levant about Oscar Levant used to say, I knew Doris Day before she became a virgin. And in fact, she had this most remarkable, for those people who only think of Doris Day as, you know, the lady whose smile was so sweet it contained cyclamates. She had an amazing career. I mean, she did drama, and I mean, she was in Hitchcock films. She was she did the Rock Hudson films you talk about. I mean, that's some amazing stuff.
And she had her own TV show.
She had her own
too.
TV show.
You
know, and you know, very much an adult performer with adult concerns, and that was very rare at that time.
An absolute legend. Legend. The television career of George Gobel, and first of all, this is a guy that. I think he died in 81. It's been a long time since he's been around. So he's lost
maybe late 80s, but I honestly can't remember.
But that. A loss to a couple generations probably from a comedian standpoint.
Yeah.
And he's one of Chicago's very own. Went to Roosevelt High School in Chicago. Was on the National Barn Dance WLS.
That's right, Georgie Gobel.
Yeah. And KMOX in St. Louis. But then he did a TV show on NBC, I think, in the 1950s.
Yes, yes, and
was it a sitcom or was it a
no?
A
it was a, well,
show?
It was. I hesitate to call it a variety show because that implies spectacle.
Okay.
In fact, but it was a variety show. It's just in a way, it was sort of a combination between a variety show and a situation comedy because it was based around George Gobel's monologues, and of course, he was such an unassuming sort of performer. That was his deal, that he was almost like he was kind of embarrassed to be there. But invariably, yes, he'd talk about life with his wife Alice, and then, you know, he would start to talk to the audience, say, well, let me show you what I mean about my life with Alice, and then he'd just turn around and they'd be in his living room.
Oh, okay.
And
all right.
Partway through the monologue he might come back and say, and now here's a song from Peggy King. And it was really in its way, pretty groundbreaking, and Carl Tiedemann, who I actually wrote for David Letterman for a time in the 80s, wrote a great piece about Gobel for us, and
that's cool.
Yeah, it was sort of like, and really,
it's a guy you don't hear about, and that's why I like you.
Right,
it's amazing,
and
if,
it's funny now. If you go to YouTube, you will see George Gobel's TV show, and it's brilliant.
Yeah,
and thank goodness for YouTube in that regard.
Yeah, right.
But you're right. It's one of those things. The Digest loves to feature performers who, for no fault of their own, may have been overlooked or forgotten.
And he was a comedian, big comedian of the day. And so he would do the Dean Martin Show, Dinah Shore, and the Tonight Show. Of course, he was on the Hollywood Squares, I believe.
Oh,
also
yeah, even
in the
after
70s.
His own show left the air.
He made the rounds.
He was all over the place.
So in this often replayed segment from a 1969 episode of The Tonight Show, okay?
I know this one.
So it's a classic because, okay, it's Johnny. And you look at Johnny. Johnny's wearing like an ascot, I think, on the show.
Oh, yes,
from the
that's
show.
Right.
And he's dyeing his hair at that point. And Bob Hope opens. Dean Martin comes on. Mm-hmm. Everybody's drinking. Everybody's smoking. George Gobel just kind of walks out. He's not even introduced. The curtain just opens because that's how they did it back then.
Oh, yeah.
He just walks out there and starts telling jokes. And let's take a little listen to this classic segment.
I asked you about this before. I think they thought you were making a joke. The fighter pilots. You were a pilot, right?
Oh, yes. I was a pilot during the war. You remember the war. It was in all the papers. And
I read it. Well,
I told you about that the last time I was on your show, you know, but... I fought the whole war in Oklahoma.
What were you saying?
I don't know why people laugh when I say that, you know. Because that's evidently where they needed me or they wouldn't have sent me. No, go ahead and laugh. I don't care. It doesn't bother me, you know, but if you remember, you think back. No, first of all, I was an instructor. I was in B-29s first in Altus, Oklahoma, and then B-26s at Frederick, Oklahoma, and I was an instructor there. And if you think back, and I'm not mad at anybody or anything, but just remember, there was not one Japanese aircraft got past Tulsa.
Absolute classic. So Hope is sitting there, Dean Martin's sitting there, and Goebbels got his unidentified, it looked like whiskey or something.
A beverage of some kind. Yes.
It was definitely booze.
Yes.
And throughout this entire routine, Dean Martin is taking a cigarette and he's taking his cigarette butts and dumping it into his glass.
Into George Gobel's glass.
Oh,
and George
God.
Gobel is totally oblivious.
And Bob Hope is next to him shaking his head like, oh, I cannot believe you're doing this. And Carson at some point says, at what point did I lose control of the show? Because everybody's just laughing at this. It is absolutely,
I know,
a classic.
But that, even that clip, it tells you a lot about George Gobel's humor. It was that sort of, you know, dry, unassuming stuff, and it was almost like you know, he didn't expect anybody to be sticking around to listen this long. But he's still there.
Yeah. The 1908 World Champion Chicago Cubs. You got an article there too. Love that.
Thank you. Well, this is funny because we got this article last summer about the 1908 Cubs, and specifically the Fred Merkel game where there was great controversy. It's one of the, and we ran out of space. We had to bump something.
You bumped him.
And we thought, well, what can be the harm in bumping an article about the last time the Cubs won a world championship?
Yeah, hello.
And of course, yes, we then had to contact the writer and say, could you very quickly rewrite your opening to acknowledge that this has changed? And of course, Jordan did, and it's a terrific. I'm very pleased we have that piece.
It's a great story. One of the highlights in here, again, a little educational piece.
Sure.
Average salary of a baseball player was $2,500, which, you know, you think about 1908, that makes sense. $62,000 though in today's dollars.
Yes.
Not the millions, of course. These guys didn't make any money, really, until the 80s.
And I mean, you know, a lot of people, 62 grand would be a perfectly adequate salary.
Absolutely.
But you're right. You do remember that's the average. And so you're right. There are probably people who made, you know, $800 a year in 1908.
Totally right.
And then had to go work at their, you know, uncle's farm in the off-season.
That's right. That's exactly right, to make a living.
And bless their heart, we also spoke with the folks at the Baseball Hall of Fame who sent us some terrific artwork to go with
this
story.
Yeah, there's some cool stuff in there.
So if you want to know what the 1908 Cubs actually looked like, if you want to know what a world championship team looked like before Brizzo, this is the issue to get.
Great pictures. Absolutely great pictures as well. You also have from comics to radio to television to movies, calling Dick Tracy, which absolute classic in every genre, by the way.
Pretty much. Yeah. You know, I mean, he was great on radio. The comics, of course, were amazing. And it's funny, it's one of those things that I think familiarity may breed contempt or misunderstanding. But no, those early strips were incredible and very visceral and violent in their way. And, boy, you could just see Chester Gould was doing something really incredible.
Yeah.
I can't say I think as much for the Dick Tracy cartoon. I think that's kind of embarrassing.
Well, let me tell you. I want to talk a little bit about this a little bit because it was Ray Rayner's first role on WGN-TV was not Bozo. It was not the Ray Rayner show. It was Sergeant Pettibone, the host of the Dick Tracy show, Tracer, his dog. And I want to play, though. Here's a little sample of the opening. Let's take a listen.
The Dick Tracy Show.
Yeah, so there's a little flashback there.
Wow.
Yeah, didn't quite live up to the movies and
No, just and these horribly offensive caricatures too.
But, oh yeah. Well, that's why you can't play them anymore.
No, but
these days.
But that's all right, but you know what? It lent itself to a lot of different media and at a time when a lot of comic strips now, they've gone on to conquer the world, but the first thing they did was get out of the cartoons and onto radio.
That's right. Exactly right. You also have the life and career of radio announcer Harlow Wilcox, which, you know, a name, again, he passed away, I think, in 1960. Mm-hmm. He was Fibber McGee and Molly, Baby Snooks, Suspense, Victor Borga, Blondie, Boston Blackie. He was the voice of these shows, but he was probably one of the most successful announcers and pitchmen in the history of radio.
Oh, yes. And another guy, of course, with Chicago background because he got his big break in Chicago. Yes, it's interesting because Harlow Wilcox was one of the reasons I got into the golden age of radio years and years ago because I heard a Fibber McGee and Molly show. And, of course, Fibber and Molly were terrific, but one of the things that really stuck out to me and stayed with me was Harlow Wilcox, this avuncular, pleasant man reading these commercials for Johnson's Wax, and then working them into the comedy of Fibber McGee and Molly.
He made it part of the story, so you really didn't know where the commercials began and the stories ended.
Yes,
right?
and of course, he had such a warm quality to his voice, and it was really unlike anything I'd heard in 1970s commercial radio. So it was really a love affair that's continued ever since, thanks in large part to Harlow and Fibber and Molly.
And then you got something on the home movies, which, you know, we were talking upstairs during the break about the fact that, you know, we both have home movies, but on VHS. So.
That's right. My father transferred our home movies to videotape.
Yeah.
And it's funny because he remarried about 30 years ago. And I have an older sister, Chris, and his wife, my dad's wife, said to me when she watched these, said, now, just give you a heads up. It's going to be Chris.
Oh, the way
then
it was.
Then you come along. Steve.
Yeah.
Then we get the dog.
Yeah.
Dog.
Yeah.
So it's like.
In the order of things.
Right. In a way, yeah. It was sort of like a Hollywood star system. We were gently being told we were too old for this.
Ah.
At 6 or 7 years old.
But it's funny you say this because I have it on VHS too, and we got to get this stuff digitized. And there's things that now the tape gets so brittle, you got to be careful because even stuff that we transfer at the museum, which was broadcast quality tape, you run those through the machines, you got one chance usually because it breaks apart as it runs through the machine.
I guess so.
You got to get those transferred. Absolutely.
Thankfully, my mom has digitized her home movies from when she was a child.
Oh, that's brilliant. Wow, yeah. Look at that. That's cool.
Yes,
that's cool.
And we love watching those when we can.
Upcoming appearances for you? You're always telling stories about the Golden Age.
Yes, we go out in public and talk about radio and share some sound clips. Actually, Monday night, April 3rd, we're going to be in Racine, Wisconsin.
Look at you crossing the border.
Look at that. I'm a national speaker now.
Yes, you are.
Two states.
Yeah.
And that's 6:30 Monday night at the Racine Public Library. And then I believe it's Thursday the 13th in the evening. I'm going the other extreme. I'm going down to Burbank, Illinois,
California.
To talk about.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah, I better start now.
Lovely downtown Burbank, yes.
But yeah, it is a great library, so we'll be at the Burbank Public Library on the night of April 13th with a completely different talk.
Which I love. Again, and
you can
catch all that at NostalgiaDigest.com. And again, if you want to get a subscription, again, 1 year's $17, 4 issues. It's absolutely worth every dollar. You can go to NostalgiaDigest.com or you can call 773-769-6575. That's 773-769-6575. 575. I think I got it all, my friend.
You did, David. Thank you. Like
always,
a pro.
Always a pleasure, Steve.
Thank you very much, David.